right past the garage bay. Kid never even turned around. My associate drove to Bangor International Airport and parked the Ford car in one of the Hertz stalls. I told him to check for bloodstains, and when I talked to him on the phone, he said he found some blood in the middle of the front seat. That was chicken blood, almost for sure. And cleaned it up with one of those wet nap things. Then he filled in the information on the flap of the folder, dropped it into the express return box, and flew back to the Apple. What about the keys? You said he hotwired it. Well, Ginelli said, the keys were really the problem all along. That was another mistake. I chalk it up to short sleep, same as the other one, but maybe it really is old age creeping up. They were in Spurton's pocket, and I forgot to get them when I laid him to rest. But now, Ginelli took out a pair of keys on a bright yellow Hertz tab. He jingled them. Ta-da! You went back, Billy said, his voice a little hoarse. Good Christ! You went back and dug him up to get the keys. Well, sooner or later the woodchucks or the bears would have found them and dragged them around, Ginelli said reasonably. Or hunters would have found them. Probably in bird season when they go out with their dogs. I mean, it's no more than a minor annoyance to the Hertz people to get an express envelope without the keys. People are always forgetting to return keys to rental cars and hotel rooms. Sometimes they send them back, sometimes they don't bother. The service manager just dials an 800 number, reads off the car's VIN number, and the guy at the other end, from Ford or GM or Chrysler, gives him the key pattern. Presto, new keys. But if someone found a body in a gravel pit with a steel ball bearing in his head and a set of car keys in his pocket that could be traced to me, bad. Very bad news. You get me? Yes. Besides, I had to go back out there anyway, you know, Ginelli said mildly. And I couldn't go in the Nova. Why not? They hadn't seen it. I gotta tell it in order, William. Then you'll see. Another shot? Billy shook his head. Ginelli helped himself. Okay. Early Tuesday morning, the dogs. Later Tuesday morning, the Nova. Tuesday night, the heavy firepower. Wednesday morning early, the second rental car. You got all this? I think so. Now we're talking about a Buick sedan. The Avis guy wanted to give me an Ares K, said it was all he had left, and I was lucky to get that. But an Ares K wasn't right. Had to be a sedan. Unobtrusive, but fairly big. Took $20 to change his mind, but I finally got the car I wanted. I drove it back to the Bar Harbor Motor Inn, parked it, and made a couple more calls to make sure everything was happening the way I'd set it up. Then I drove over here in the Nova. I like that Nova, Billy. It looks like a mongrel and it smells like cow shit inside, but it's got bones. So I get here and finally set your mind at rest. By then I'm ready to crash again, and I'm too tired to even think about going back to Bar Harbor, and I spent the whole day in your bed. You could have called me, you know, and saved at least one trip, Billy said quietly. Ginelli smiled at him. Yeah, I could have phoned, but fuck that. A phone call wouldn't have shown me how you were, William. You haven't been the only one worried. Billy lowered his head a little and swallowed with some difficulty, almost crying again. Lately, he was always almost crying, it seemed. So, Ginelli arises, refreshed and without too much of an amphetamine hangover. He showers, jumps into the Nova, which smells more like cow shit than ever after a day in the sun, and heads back to Bar Harbor. Once there, he takes the smaller packages out of the Nova's trunk and opens them in his room. There's a .38 Colt Woodsman and a shoulder holster in one of them. The stuff in the other two packages fits into his sport coat pockets. He then leaves the room and swaps the Nova for the Buick. He thinks for a minute that if there were two of him, he wouldn't have to spend half so much time shuffling cars like a parking lot valet at a swanky Los Angeles restaurant. Then he heads out to scenic Bankerton for what he hopes will be the last fucking time. He makes just one stop along the way, at a supermarket. He goes in and buys two things. One of those ball jars women put up preserves in, and a 16-ounce bottle of Pepsi. He arrives in Bankerton just as twilight is starting to get really deep. He drives to that gravel pit and goes right in, knowing that being coy won't make a difference at this point, If the body has been found because of the excitement last night, he's going to be in the soup anyway. But no one is there, and there are no signs that anyone has been there. So he digs down to Spurton, feels around a little, and comes up with the prize, just like in the Cracker Jack box. Gianelli's voice was perfectly expressionless, but Billy found this part of it unreeling in his mind like a movie, not a particularly pleasant one. Gianelli, squatting down, pushing aside the gravel with his hands, finding Spurton's shirt, his belt, his pocket, reaching in, fumbling through sandy change that would never be spent, and underneath the pocket, chilly flesh that was stiffened into rigor mortis. At last, the keys and the hasty reinterment.
"Brr," Billy said and shivered.
"It is all a matter of perspective, William," Gianelli said calmly. "Believe me, it is." I think that's what scared me about it, Billy thought, and then listened with growing amazement as Gianelli finished the tale of his remarkable adventures.
Hertz's keys in his pocket, Gianelli returned to the Avis Buick. He opened the Pepsi-Cola, poured it into the ball jar, then closed the jar with the wire cap. That done, he drove up to the gypsy camp.
"I knew they'd still be there," he said. "Not because they wanted to still be there, but because the state bears would have damn well told them to stay put until the investigation was over. Here's a bunch of, well, nomads, you might as well call them. Strangers in a hick town like Bakerton, to be sure. And some other stranger or strangers come along in the middle of the night and shoot up the place. The cops tend to get interested in stuff like that." They were interested, all right. There was a Maine State Police cruiser and two unmarked Plymouths parked at the edge of the field. Gianelli parked between the Plymouths, got out of his car, and started down the hill to the camp. The dead station wagon had been hauled away, presumably to a place where the crime lab people could go over it. Halfway down the hill, Gianelli met a uniformed state bear headed back up.
"You don't have any business here, sir," the bear said. "You'll have to move along."
"I convinced him that I did have a spot of business there," Gianelli told Billy, grinning.
"How did you do that?"
"Showed him this."
Gianelli reached into his back pocket and tossed Billy a leather folder. He opened it. He knew what he was looking at immediately. He had seen a couple of these in the course of his career as a lawyer. He supposed he would have seen a lot more of them if he had specialized in criminal cases,